This is Phil Ferrand, and I am walking around once again. So Dustin still has a class on Tuesdays and Thursdays, although this is his last week. So that means I do not have Aiden, and I'm working from home. I could have driven around because I had a couple of different trips I made today, taking my beloved back and forth. And I just forgot I could have done it on the first one, and I made a conscious decision not to do it on the second one. My poor beloved has had a time of it these last few weeks. I mean, it's just been one thing after another. She did have the kidney stone removed last Friday. That was pretty rough, but we got that done. She's been recovering, but then she had a stent in, and that was really starting to give her some grief in the last few days. We went down today. I took her down before I started work for a few hours, and she got that removed, and at first it was, you know, it was better. She was so happy to have it out, and now it's really, you know, spasming and that sort of thing. So she's going to be back on the pain medications, and hopefully that'll get it settled down. And her primary care physician is putting her back on antibiotics for 3 days. So really hoping that all of that will kind of settle things down a little bit. I mean, we still have the back issue to deal with because she does have a ruptured disc between L4 and L5. But tomorrow we're going to see the doctor about that. So hopefully by tomorrow we're going to start having a plan. Got to have a plan. And theoretically, ruptured discs can repair themselves under the right physical therapy, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm taking her to the doctor, the orthopedic doctor and back doctor, taking her to the back doctor tomorrow and in the afternoon. And we're going to see if we can get that all figured out. So step at a time, step at a time. Writing is going fine. I did rough in my little book on the Lord's Prayer. I think it turned into 95 pages by the time I formatted it out. I may have mentioned last week that I put a little puzzle in the back of the original Still Whispers. So I built one of those puzzles for this book. And it's always kind of amazing because it's a non-trivial, it's a non-trivial undertaking to build one of these things. But you know what? Turned out just fine. And I didn't really use AI to try to do it. I'm not sure that I could have used AI for it because there's a set of data that has to be generated graphically in a very specific manner. And then after you have that set of data, which is just a collection of letters and potentially numbers, after you have that generated, then you have to turn around. It's just a whole string of letters and numbers. Then you have to turn around and build a haiku out of that, and which is, you know, five syllables, seven syllables, and then five syllables. And then you have to do it in such a way that, in this case, both of them have had the last word of the haiku removed. And the solution that you come up with has to be specific and absolutely unique. So it has to be built in such a way that it can only be one thing when you're done. But, you know, got it done, thanks to Jesus. I mean, there was, as I was getting ready to start building it, you know, Jesus gave me the 7-syllable line, which is the middle line, just boom. It was like, oh, that'll work. So once I had that, then I could sort of back my way into the rest of it and make the tweaks that I needed to make everything come out okay. And I think I had mentioned that I had run the puzzle from 2008 through ChatGPT, and I eventually got it to dig out most of the information. And once it had done that and we got it all categorized, it looked like for a moment that I had swapped a T for an S somewhere along the line, which meant that the puzzle was wrong. But then I got up the next day and I very carefully went through it again and realized that no, I hadn't made a mistake. I just counted it wrong, and so that all worked out. So once I had everything built and had the internal pages all laid out, I went ahead and started last night trying to get ChatGPT to see if it could come up with a solution, the solution for this puzzle. And I don't know if there's been an update to ChatGPT or what has happened, but in the last day and a half, 2 days, it has given me a lot of flim-flamming around when I ask it to do something. You know, it'll say, oh yeah, no problem, I can do that for you. I mean, I had it prepare the notes for this podcast on the topic, and I told it the topic that, oh, no problem, I can go out and I can gather this from there and there and there, and we can put together a podcast that looks like this and blah, blah, blah. So we did it, and then the page count turned out to be like 56 pages because of the way it had formatted everything. And so, you know, I had said, like, that's 56 pages, too many pages. I've got to have this thing fit in 10 to 12 pages. Oh, no problem, I can reformat that for you. We can do this and we can do that, and that'll be great. Okay, great, do it. You know, because we can preserve this and this and this by doing this and this. Okay, great, just do it. Well, before I do it, I should probably mention that this and this. And it just keeps doing that. And I finally kept saying, go, no more talking, just build the script. So then finally it built that script. So I ran into basically the same thing as I was trying to get it to solve this puzzle. And I already knew that I couldn't just one-shot the solution to the puzzle. Even though it understood the rules, how it should go about everything, the chat interface isn't necessarily agentic. So, and it told me that basically at one point. It said, well, you got one or two ways to do this. You know, you can go and start a project, and inside the project, you can, because in order to solve this puzzle, you really need to solve a bunch of sub-steps and then aggregate up the solution set. And it can't do that from the chat interface. That's not what the chat interface is designed to do. It's more designed just to take a set of input and give you an output, period. You know, it's not really meant to iterate over things. And so, I was running into that problem with it. I was like, well, maybe I should just do 5 or 8 at a time, and then we can go from there. It's like, okay. So I finally just gave up. And this morning, my task this morning was to say, okay. Too much flim-flamming around, too much side talk. Let's just do this. Solve it for this chapter. And so then we just started marching through each chapter, and sure enough, you know, it picked everything out. I had to tell it probably 20% of the time that no, try again. Had to do that try again thing not too many times, but a few times. And then the next time it would find it, or at the very least, the third time it would find what it needed to find. And then I had to put everything together. Look at the haiku, solve for the last word, you know. And it got it. So, yay. So that gives me a backup. To know that I think I've got everything laid out correctly to get this done. So that's good. So now the next big step is to see what we can do about a cover. So once I have that, then we'll go ahead and put together a cover. We'll order a proof. Once I get the proof back, then I'll recruit some beta readers and we'll see if we can't get the beta read launched a little early for this, and then I'll move on to the book for the parables. I have a little hesitation about doing the book on the parables because I have some stuff, but I don't have a ton of stuff, and the question is, are you actually going to march through every single parable? Because there's a lot of them. So I don't know, but I feel like the book on the parables is something that I should do. So we'll just launch into it. You know, kind of all the pressure is off on deadlines now, so should be fine. Did Marvin the Martian last weekend. That went fine. I put it on once and hobbled around. I just love this spot on the walk, because I'm down to the bridge. I'm getting ready to turn around, but I just love the sound of water. And I love the sound of the birds. So good. So good. Anyways, turning around, heading back up. I need to look up this quote. Somebody came down to this little bridge and they put a quote on the bridge down here. I'm guessing it's not unique or original with whoever put it on here, but the quote is, and I might have mentioned this before, misery, this is the quote, misery is wasted on the miserable. So I could come up with potential solutions for what that means, but maybe I'll look it up, ask ChatGPT when I get back to the house. What do you think this means? Anyways, so did Marvin the Martian, wrestled the suit on Friday morning for Walmart and got that done. And then on Saturday, I was with a buddy, and I think I'd mentioned there's a young server who's making some kind of an album. She wants to take pictures of me every week and the stuff, and so that's fine. And so she happened to be there on Saturday, so I had already kind of talked to her boss and said, well, I've got the actual costume out there, and I showed him a picture of it. He said, oh, that's cool. I said, but I don't want to disrupt your business. And he said, no. He said, that's fine. Don't worry about that. So I felt like I had permission to actually go get it on, so my buddy helped me get it all on and navigate up to the front of the restaurant. So we came out, we did pictures, yada, yada, yada. Got that all taken care of, so it's good. And that was better anyways, because I didn't put it on when I got back to Walmart on Saturday, because I really needed to get out of there, because our church, one moment, our church had its ribbon cutting ceremony for the new all accessible playground that we built at the park they've been building. And so that was at 11, and my wife wanted to go to that. So I got back in time, but I was able to get changed, get video recorded, get her back there. And then she was gonna go out with her friend and get a pedicure and kick around, because she hadn't been out of the house for so long. I went to do a little bit of running around, and she called me. It was maybe 45 minutes later. It was a little warm on Saturday, and she said, can you come get me? She said, I'm feeling nauseous and I'm shaking, and sure. So I went over there, and when I was picking her up, I mean, she was shaking and stuff, and she had got a touch of heat exhaustion. So we got her back home and got her in the air conditioning, got some water down her, and you know, got her recovered without too many side effects. But yeah, she just had a whole bunch of stuff going on. Anyways, so done with Marvin the Martian in 2 weeks. Now, not this Friday or next Friday, but the next Friday, it's gonna be National Potato Day. So it'll be time to get the Mr. Potato Head costume on. And I did install my latches on the inside of that, so that's good there, but I have a little bit of work to do. The hat has never really sat correctly, so gotta get that, gotta put some reinforcements in to get the hat to sit correctly. And then all the insertable pieces for Mr. Potato Head. Why does this look like it's not going? Uh-oh. Well, rats, I hit a button to see if the screen was actually going, and the button I hit was the button to stop. So I'll just seam these two pieces together. Anyways, so that I shouldn't have any trouble at all getting that put together in 2 weeks. It's a matter of just drilling some holes and manufacturing a couple little brackets and ta-da, ta-da, ta-da. So I think all that will work and it'll be fine, step at a time. Anyway, so that's all good. Then once I get Mr. Potato Head done, I don't think there's anything else that I'm gonna do this year for costumes besides Halloween. So I can start on the Halloween stuff. And that'll give me a couple of months to get the Halloween stuff done, which I think should be plenty of time. So it's good. Everything's good. All is well. So this week, I came across a story that I don't think I had ever heard before. Joe Rogan was doing an interview with a guy, and they were referring to this story that they both seem to know very well, and I don't think I'd ever heard of this. I went back and checked the descriptions on the podcast, because, you know, it's been a lot of years on the podcast. I mean, I think I started these podcasts in 2009, so, you know, it's been a lot of years, but I didn't come up with anything in my descriptions that looked like it dealt with this story. And I don't know what to make about this story. There is... what is probably one of the strangest portions of scripture that people have tried to come up with alternate explanations for. Because the idea is very much visited in the Book of Enoch, but of course the Book of Enoch is not considered authoritative, even though it is clearly referenced in some of the writings that we do consider authoritative, and specifically it is referenced in Genesis, I think it's before the flood, where I'm sure that ChatGPT included this in my notes. So let me just see. Yeah. So in Genesis 6, it says, the Nephilim were on the earth in those days and also afterwards. These were mighty men of old, the men of renown. So, you know, the question is, okay, so who were the Nephilim? And it appears that there's a section, well, there is a section in Genesis that it says when the sons of God looked upon the daughters of men, you know, that they found them pleasing and they went down and they had sex with them, and that giants were born into the land. So there's been a couple of different ways to interpret that. You know, some have said, well, the sons of God are really just the sons of Seth. And when it says giants, it really means like spiritual men. They were giants of being holy men. Although I wouldn't know what that would have to do with anything. You know, the fact that the sons of Seth looked upon the daughters of men. But anyways, there is this reference in Genesis to giants being in the land. Okay, so there is that. Interestingly, there are references to giants through a lot of the early cultural writings. And interestingly, in multiple places in the world, the lore refers to giants as having six fingers and six toes and being redheaded. It's just interesting. So, and I think one of the characteristics of Goliath was that, you know, he had six fingers on each hand. It's just interesting. I don't know quite what to make of it. Well, so this story that this man was talking to Joe Rogan about was that supposedly when we were in Afghanistan, in Kandahar, and this story is goes by the title of The Giant of Kandahar. Supposedly there was a team, and they were way back up in the hills. Because that's the one thing about Afghanistan. Afghanistan is like a really, really old country. And there's so many hills and so many isolated places. And they, you know, they were way back up in there looking for insurgents and stuff. And I don't know if they saw, like on the satellite images, that the people of this little village kept bringing food and leaving it at the mouth of this cave. And so, I don't know, maybe the military thought, well, that's probably some location where there's insurgents, and so they wanted to go check it out. And according to this guy on Joe Rogan, you know, they set one team in, and the team disappeared. So then they sent the next team in. And, you know, they were had a little more situational awareness about them. I made it back to the house here, so I'm just going to stand outside here for a little bit and finish this up. So let me put this down. So, you know, they, this other team goes in and they retrace the patrol's route and they find broken equipment, scattered gear, and, you know, violent struggle led to the entrance of this large cave. And they said when they approached the cave, something emerged from the darkness. And according to witnesses, supposedly, it stood between 12 and 15 feet tall, long reddish hair, full beard, pale skin, six fingers on each hands and toes, on each hand, six toes on each foot, etc. Had an enormous spear. According to the legend, the creature charged before the soldiers fully understood what they were seeing. One member of the team was allegedly killed when the spear struck him. Remaining soldiers opened fire with their weapons. And at first, supposedly, the giant kept coming at them, besides being hit multiple times, only after sustained gunfire to the head and torso did it finally collapse. Okay, so, you know, according to the legend, Chinook helicopter arrived to recover the body because of its side and the remains allegedly had to be transported in a cargo net before being flown to Bagram Air Force Base. And after that, the trail supposedly disappeared in the classified military channels. So, this guy who was talking to Joe Rogan says that it was Wade, and he supposedly has talked to people who were there during the incident. They said they weighed it. And supposedly this creature, this giant, weighed like 1,100 pounds. So, you know, it's like, well, you know, did this really happen? It's one of those things that you've got so many people involved with it. Like, how do you keep this all a secret for so long? But, you know, we're finding out more and more that a lot of the UAP stuff was apparently kept a secret for 80 years. You know, maybe, I don't know. It's just a really kind of interesting thing, especially since many ancient texts refer to giants. So, a lot of mythology refers to giants. The Bible refers to giants, you know, not only in vague terms, but in very specific terms, like the King Og of Bashan. Who supposedly had a bed that was like roughly 13 feet long, but who knows, that might have just been built for ceremonial purposes. It's just really interesting. It's like, well, what do you do with all this stuff? And of course, Goliath. But the manuscripts kind of disagree about his height. You know, the traditional Hebrew text has him about 9 feet tall. Dead Sea Scrolls puts him closer to six or seven. You know, but this idea of giants has certainly been with us for a long time. You know, so I asked ChatGPT to kind of do some research for me and put a script together for me, and it ended up with, you know, the following kind of closing paragraph. So where does that leave the giant of Kandahar? And it said, well, the legend contains compelling details and includes military terminology, realistic settings, and enough specificity to feel authentic. And yet, after years of investigation, none of its central claims have been independently verified. No physical evidence has emerged. No documented military records have surfaced. No identified eyewitness has publicly confirmed the story under scrutiny, except for the few that have come forward. This does not prove that the encounter never happened. It simply means we cannot conclude that it did. It says, perhaps the giant of Kandahar is the last surviving echo of an ancient mystery. Perhaps it began with a real but misunderstood military incident that grew larger with every retelling. Or perhaps it is simply the newest chapter in humanity's oldest fascination, the belief that somewhere beyond the edge of the known world, extraordinary things still wait to be discovered. And then ChatGPT decided to conclude with, whatever the truth may be, the story reminds us of something important. History is full of mysteries. Some are eventually solved. Others remain suspended between fact and folklore, inviting each generation to ask the same question. What if? Dun, dun, dun. So I don't know. I found that to be just a very interesting little thing, because like I said, I just had never heard of this story before about anything called the Giant of Kandahar. At least I don't think I had. You know, it's possibly I came across it and forgot it. But, you know, there be mysteries in the world. And for me, all I'm doing is I'm just trying to stay with Jesus and just thank him for his goodness and be joyful in him and follow his path and ask him for my daily bread and for his help forgiving others as he has forgiven me and trying to stay out of temptation and be delivered from evil. So, you know, it's a good day when all that stuff happens. This is Phil Farron, and I have finished walking around.